Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the city again. This truly is the worst idea of all time.
Well, everybody, it's time to join not just Timbo and Guy Guy for the third episode of And Just Like That, but it is my great pleasure to finally have on the podcast Maureen Johnson, celebrated best-selling novelist. I could not be more excited, Maureen, to talk to you about the series. How the fuck are you?
I'm good.
That's Sai speaks volumes. Before you launch into your answer, Maureen, I just want to know, were you going to or did you have intentions on watching this series at all before we asked you to talk about it?
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely no. No. In fact, I have some previous with this. So with the Sex and the City universe.
Please take us through your journey with the Sex and the City. Sure. I think the audience is familiar with ours.
Well, briefly, I came to the city around the same time that Sex and the City starts. And So I was moving into that New York. Except I was a writer and a student at Columbia, where Miranda goes now. And I had $0 and 0 cents at all times. And everyone said, there's this amazing show on HBO. I was like, HBO, who has money for that kind of nonsense? And they said it has hilarious plots, like a woman sends $40,000 on shoes. And I said, I never want to watch that shit. And I never did. Except it would be on the background sometime. And it'd be like, who are these fuckwits? And why are they buying all these shoes? And I don't even like shoes. What do people really like this show? So I never see it, really. I absorb some of it. Okay, flash forward to the year that Sex and the City 2 comes out. Now, it just so happens
2008?
You've seen it.
I have.
I think it was, it was after that, wasn't it?
Because was it 9?
I think it was 10, wasn't it?
I'm going to look this up.
All I can tell you about that year is that
it was 10, and I will hear from Guy Montgomery briefly, and then I will hear from Maureen.
Thank you for mediating our conversation through this dastardly internet connection, Tim. I was just going to confidently say it was 2008. I started saying that. I cut people off. I was proven wrong before I even got to finish the sentence. This is one of the most
that's embarrassing.
Vulnerable positions I've been in podcasting. I will. I've got reams of notes here, but I'm much more interested to hear what Maureen has to say. And then maybe we can have a little corner where I contribute my pathetic sort of thoughts.
I know it was 2010 because I had a medical issue that year that resulted in me having constant rolling panic attacks like every day. No, this is not a sad story. It's a fine story because it was just going on and on and on. And my friend said to me, Maureen, you need cheering up. I'm going to take you to the movies. And she took me to Sex and the City 2. And I sat there for two and a half hours and dissociated.
Oh my God.
And watched this movie that I thought, everyone thinks this is comedy? This is fun? I understand that you guys, there's a question in the back, Mr. Montgomery.
Guy is now raising his hand for those who can't see us. Yes, Guy.
Well, I just wanted to say, I was hoping Maureen would finish a thought and then I'd get to say a thought. I'm sort of using the classroom system here. I just wanted to say that 2.5 hours. The thing with that is, I can't speak to the rolling panic attacks that surround your context of watching Sex and the City 2, but that is long enough for your mind to take you to some either incredible or dark places. Like 2.5 hours in a movie that is not holding your attention, and some of this is from experience, is honestly like it's an access way to like the innermost parts of your mind, or like, you know, you amble down some pretty long streets of thought. And so it's, you know, like you provided fantastic context, and I'm interested to know, like, did you have any either you know, breakthrough thoughts
or any breakdowns?
Yeah. That's right. Any harrowing moments?
Well, it's funny you should say that. The reason I was having all these anxiety attacks is, it turns out I had this crazy anemia. My brain didn't have enough oxygen, so I thought maybe the experience will be different if my brain is full of beautiful oxygen and I'm not having panic attacks all the time. And it turns out that to prepare for this, I was like, I'll sit down and I will watch all three episodes. And let me tell you, it took me right back to where I was.
Oh, no, Maureen. No, I'm so sorry.
No, in a fine way. And anyway, I've exorcised the demon. The demin is dead. But
in what way? And that it's like, it, obviously, this isn't, I mean, I guess it's not as bad as Sex and the City 2, but I wouldn't say it's streets ahead of it in terms of enjoyability.
Those first two episodes are, they're a ride. They're
take me through it, Maureen. I mean, you haven't heard yet because, so we're recording this on the day that I think we're releasing the first episode. You have not heard what I think about these first two episodes. I would also love to hear what you think about the first two episodes of And Just Like That.
Well, first of all, I knew I was in safe hands. Also, I reevaluated my position with Sex and the City 2 because I have listened to that season probably four times in its entirety. I've listened to 5 Hour Energy twice. Two times.
It's incredibly flattering. It's as flattering as it is worrying.
I have a list of things that I remember from the show. Not this. I think the moment I worried about you guys the most, in general, was not a Sex and the City moment. It was the moment when you went to LA and someone gave you a vial that just said party drugs. According to you.
Oh God! Yeah.
So I don't think it was your lowest moment. Emotionally, I think it was probably your lowest moment. It was probably your lowest moment, wasn't it?
Well, I can tell you what Guy's one was because it was my favorite part. If this was the right episode, because I think I sprung it on Guy that we would be watching it again, I think. And I remember that being very funny to me in the moment. Guy's real-time reaction to that being the situation, that we were not, in fact, 100% complete. We were 50% complete.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say for anyone, even without the run up that we'd taken with Sex and the City 2, that would probably garner a similar response. And honestly, it's an interesting situation, is it? Because I am the most vulnerable in terms of that's the worst I could feel, but also in terms of fitness and stamina, I'm probably, you know, one of the few load bearing people who could actually handle that kind of. You know, mammoth surprise.
Yeah, you're a real champ for sitting through a movie twice, Guy.
Maureen is back on my screen. For the first time in the podcast, I can now see Maureen. And I feel fantastic. Like I'm back in the room.
Back in the game.
Anyway, let's get off this the ancillary products. Maureen, I want us back on the railroad of And Just Like That. Because this isn't even as... What amazed me is this isn't even Sex and the City... Subtitle And Just Like That. This is just called And Just Like That.
It's a new product.
Maybe it's a Samantha thing. I don't know.
Well, the first, right before I watched the first episode, I got a tweet from a reader that said, hey, I was watching And Just Like That and I screenshot this and they sent me a photo. I'm an author and there in the background, sitting on the shelf in Charlotte's daughter's room, is one of my fucking books. And there's not that many books on the shelf. There's like 6 books on there.
That is pretty fucking cool. I saw that tweet. How did that make you feel?
Weird. No, nervous, very nervous, and I'll get to why. Because I only get more nervous as time. I'll tell you exactly why I'm nervous. Because in the flash or in the little coming up on, they show her kind of, they show Charlotte doing something in that bedroom, and she's waving her arm around, and she's getting very near my book, and I start to think, oh my God! In the first episode, they kill Big with a Peloton. So what if one of these characters touches my book and dies?
Oh, wow.
And dies from it.
Yeah. I mean, they've already established in this universe, A, characters, well-established characters can die.
Yeah.
Or B, sort of seconded away to Europe and then spoken about behind people's backs. Your book may absolutely be a murder weapon. I wouldn't have said that was possible for the movies but and the old TV show, but in this one, all bets are off.
I have frozen that screen and studied those books. And you know what? Those are not YA books. Only mine and maybe one other. So for some reason, I'm on that shelf next to Julian Barnes and some other shit that I do not belong with. So I don't know what... Just like they are clearly sending you a message through this whole podcast thing.
Yes,
which
yes.
I have a lot of questions about.
Yeah.
Can I just ask this question now? Because it really runs throughout.
I mean, we did, we spoke about it a little bit in the first two episodes because it has to be said, it feels a bit targeted. Mm. And I think we should not immediately discount out of hand the possibility that Mattress Pikelet King is a listener and unhappy about the project.
You can just talk, you don't have to raise your hand for all of it. I actually quite like raising my hand. It makes me feel strong. There's more evidence pointing towards either knowledge that we exist in the world or like Easter eggs for Tim and Guy. But when Carrie goes to, when Carrie in the middle of a pretty intensely, I mean, Carrie's back to like full flight sort of Sex and the City movie levels of obviously she's grieving her husband and I mourn with her. But also that does not give you the right to stalk your husband's ex-wife. I think there is a limit to, you know, what you can do with your grief and hunting down someone who clearly has sent you like reasonable signals that they do not want to be communicated with. But anyway, that's all by the by, because my observation is she goes to visit her at her work. She brushes past the receptionist. She's sitting down in the foyer, the waiting room. Very, very nice, like very like big, big room, high ceilings. And behind her, the feature of the shot.
Instead of foyer, could we shift that to foyer? It's just more fun.
Yeah, of course. In the foyer,
thank you.
Behind a beautiful long couch in which Carrie Bradshaw sits, slightly off of center, there is a picture the size of a house. Like, I've not seen art flex this intensely. I think in my life, I've never seen an image that is not a mural on a wall rendered in such like scale and high definition. And what should it be but a photo of one of New Zealand's most famous exports, one of our identifying characteristics and part of our national identity, certainly as we're perceived by others, but a fucking sheep standing in front of a rolling meadow, staring down the barrel of the camera, looking at Tim and Guy saying, bah, bah, fucking bah, you sheep fucking podcasting pricks.
Yeah, I got that vibe too, because before Peter Jackson came around with his big Miramax dick-swinging multi-million-dollar budget Hobbit fiasco to put New Zealand on the map as a home for mythological tiny men, it was famous for sheep. I can't even remember the stat off the top of my head, but it was something like when we had a population of, I think, 3 million people, we had something like 12 million sheep at the time. And that was often, I think, a pub quiz fact about New Zealand. That was where people's knowledge of the great nation of Aotearoa started and ended before Lord of the Rings. So, that did feel a bit targeted.
I did think of you guys.
It certainly did. And then the further evidence through this episode and an entire series.
Beautiful shot, though. It's got to be said.
They like a bleak room.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't like a big room? Is the featuring of Shay Diaz, the non-binary podcast host / stand-up comedian. They give that character a stand-up comedy special taping and play down essentially 5 minutes of... And just like that's version of stand-up comedy, which is basically sort of grandstanding with the concept of a joke introduced once. Like, there was 5 minutes of stand-up, and there were probably four attempts
this was
at comedy.
Towards the end, Guy, in the name of structure for crying out loud, because I hope that people aren't necessarily watching the show along with us. Mm. Maureen, if it would be all right with you, I know you took a lot of notes. You are a professional storyteller. If I started some sort of a clock, do you think you could give us a summation of what happens in this episode in like 3 minutes?
Yeah, if I can even remember.
give it a go, because this will be fun.
Let's see. Carrie, she doesn't sleep. She's got to go to the will reading. And it's a real pain in the ass because her lawyer yeah. won't get off the fucking phone. Her lawyer is having an argument with his wife about the dog. Miranda is yelling. Miranda has a drinking problem. Miranda is mad. She's like, speed this up. I got to go to lunch. What's his face with the glasses?
Stanford
is angry at Charlotte. Charlotte's daughter may be non-binary. She's not sure. There's $1 million left in the will to Natasha. And so Carrie stalks her, first going to the places where she lives and works, and finally just accidentally walks into her in a bathroom in a coffee shop in a different part of town, burns herself. Natasha, I guess, forgives her for some shit. I don't even know. And then we just close out. We get a couple. Do we even do the podcast? I can't remember. And then there's seven
That's
minutes
right at the start.
Yeah, there's 7 minutes of comedy. Miranda sort of makes out with Shay, but she gets a little that weed thing. That was to you guys. The whole thing's to you guys.
That was a minute 11. I am super impressed with the brevity because I don't think you missed anything. I think that was all the big beats. Guy, is there anything that wasn't featured in there?
Yep. A few vital details. Anthony's startup, Hot Fellas, which is guys in tight denim rompers delivering bread, is fleshed out a little bit. And also we get just essence of Brady and partner Miranda and Steve are watching. Like, one of the characters arcs for Miranda and Steve is that they watch shows on streaming platforms on their TV at home. And Brady and his girlfriend are in the kitchen making food. And I actually love, I mean, the more, it's not a surprise. Well, actually, it does feel like this is custom made for us, because Brady's character is one of the few to come off like they're building on his story in a way which makes me want to spend more time with him. And like, his partner's really funny, where she's like incidentally rude, but from a very good place, where she's like, hey, you guys are getting older. And, full fat milk's actually better for aging bones. And of course, they've got a bear in their bonnet because she is a fuck machine, not unlike their son. And instead of just taking that information on and being like, you're right, we should strengthen our bones, they're like, can you believe this fucking woman is telling us about our bones? But otherwise, I mean, Maureen,
she's not wrong too.
You're an accomplished audience member. And I mean, you know, if you get tired of writing novels, I think writing blurbs is certainly well within your reach. That was sensational.
Well, I have a couple questions about those scenes. Do we think that every single night they have at Miranda's house, apparently every single night they do a full ice cream sundae bar?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's canon now, because the things that come out in a brief conversation with Charlotte is that they do not have sex, have not had sex for years, and the only sort of thing holding their relationship together is A, having a child together, who seems very independent and unencumbered by them these days, and their nightly dessert routine. Those are the things that are keeping those cats together. So I think this is every single night they're hoeing. It's a sundae, right? She's essentially making a sundae bar at home.
Yeah, it's a sundae bar. It's a big tray and it's full. But for some reason, the main thing they put on ice cream is chia seeds.
Yeah, they fucking love chia seeds.
Yeah, they really.
And talk about chia seeds in the teeth.
Mm. Yeah. I like that they mention chia seeds enough
for us
to finally understand. Oh, I'm so sorry. This is why the hand system works.
Nope.
I just like that they talked about chia seeds long enough for us to know Steve's position on chia seeds. We don't have to wonder about that anymore. He hates them. He gets them stuck in his teeth. And I'd also like to say I love chia pudding. Don't have an opinion on the seeds.
Hey, while we've while we've got you, Guy, while the internet's sustaining your conversation, could I make a request to you? Like, you're some sort of jukebox. Could I get you doing Steve spelling chia seeds?
Oh, chia seeds. Seeds. C. E.
Guy's still got it, but Steve doesn't.
D. S. Chia seeds. All right.
Thanks, Steve. You were wrong on the third letter, I believe, but we appreciate the attempt.
It's actually quite hard to misspell chia seeds. Phonetically, it is almost a perfect match.
You know, chia and chia, the che, it's almost, is that one of the, is that a
reference?
Oh. I'm just trying, I'm just saying. Sheets, the
is
chia
this mattress
seeds.
Pikelet King's way of saying non-binary people, the whole concept sticks in my craw as chia seeds stick in my teeth?
Yes.
I don't know, but he just seems to keep bringing up the topic a lot in this season.
He is, there's some interest in it.
Big time.
Why, is it typical in a comedy gig like the one that Che does at the end, for there to be no chairs?
I would say it's not like, outside the realm of possibility to be an all-standing gig. For a taping, it might
I don't
be
think
weird.
I've seen a single special... Yeah, where everyone is standing. And also, I thought that was a crazy decision by the producers of Shay's Netflix special. I was like, it's going to be distracting. I mean, sure, if you get into the special, you might forgive it. But watching it for that whole time, I was like, these people should be sitting there. And also, I guess maybe they're going for a different energy. They want a different vibe. And you know, that's their prerogative. I'd also, quickly, while we're talking about the special, like to say... Mattress Pikelet appears to have become obsessed with making sure that the name of the thing is mentioned in the thing, because every episode ends with "and just like that," and Shay's special is called "Check the Box." And I mean, it's not unheard of in stand up, but I'm like, you know, you can name a thing and then it can just be alluded to. You don't need to expressly point it out every single time. Give us a frickin' break.
Yeah, Maureen, as a professional writer, like, do you think that is a clever thing to do or a kind of childish thing to do of keep having to say the name of the thing?
No, you just
time?
Hammer that shit in over and over again. You don't say it once, you say it 5 times. You say it 10 times. Pound that shit in.
You can't risk your idiot fucking audience missing the point.
Absolutely.
While we're talking stand-up, I said it last time, and Tim sort of went off against stand-up comedians saying that we're awful people in general, which, if I'm being completely honest, part of it felt like it was directed at stand-ups, but a lot of it felt like it was directed at Tim. One of the last things that you really want to see, or that I want to see, is stand-up comedy as rendered in the Sex and the City universe, specifically the "and just like that." It's a hard thing to capture inside of a fictitious universe ordinarily, but to see it, you know, laid out alongside all of the other shit they're trying to do in this show is insane. And I was on the record, Maureen, you wouldn't have heard this, but I actually was so grateful the first episode to be back with these characters, making different choices, doing different things. I was like high, honestly. I was high on my response to the fact that these people I've spent so much time with are finally free from the shackles of a trip to Abu Dhabi or a marriage being cancelled. But here we are, episode 3, the high's worn off. I am back to the plummeting lows of being trapped in a hell designed to contain these fucking harpies.
Do you know what I remember, which I'd forgotten on our first two episodes of the series? The reason that Kim Cattrall gave for leaving or not wanting to participate in the third movie that was going to come out is because of the storyline with Big. And she said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she was like, I just don't want to be around as this accessory to Carrie Bradshaw processing her grief. Because like everything in this show is just... Everything is a handbag for Carrie to pick up and use and then discard later on and not kind of grow from it, learn from it, love the handbag. We're all just these objects for her to pick up and look at and then put down again. And she was totally right, because it's amazing that they ran with that story. They were like, that got leaked online for the third movie. Everyone was like, this is crazy, you can't do this. They're like, yeah, fuck you, all right, we can't do that. But then they did it. They did it for the series.
They fucking did it. It is.
They didn't change a damn thing. He still died in the shower, just like the leak online said about 2 years ago, I think.
Which I learned from you guys, because I'm not going to learn that in any other way. You were my sole source of Sex and the City. All I know is from you and that one time I was in that movie.
With that in mind, Maureen, can I ask, do the behaviors of the characters and, you know, the surrounding world, that what we created, the, you know, the prism through which you're coming to Sex and the City or And Just Like That, which is obviously through us responding to it, did everything roughly align with what you expected? Did you like anyone more than you thought or dislike anyone more than you thought? Like, what was your response to what you were seeing?
Well, I met Steve for the first time, and I didn't know just how good your Steve was. I'd never encountered Steve. Stanford and his husband are exactly as awful as you've always said. Carrie seems more sociopathic, maybe in this. But, I mean, she may go down in history as the only person to try to throw a chic funeral.
Yep. This episode really drives it home as well. Like, I took, like, three notes. One of them is, and I wrote this at the kind of halfway point of the episode, Miranda is going to hook up with Shay, but then it'll be put on ice while she deals with her alcoholism. So I didn't expect them to have that kiss. I thought that was going to happen in episode 4. That basically happened at the end of this episode. I was baffled by the fact that Charlotte threw a quote out there. No, sorry, Miranda did, about bodies being in motion, remain in motion, bodies at rest, stay at rest, saying it to Shay. And then Shay was like, "That I did not say that on stage. That was not in my special." And then Miranda says, "Oh, yeah, that was a quote from Sir Isaac Newton." And it was the loudest sir. Like, why the fuck would you say Sir Isaac Newton?
Losing my mind?
Or I don't know. Something about that.
That was a quote by Sir Isaac Newton that I have or saw on a drink bottle? Or did I imagine
it's on
a drink bottle?
It's on her water bottle, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then, so to get back to what Maureen was saying about the, I think diagnosable sociopathy of Carrie Bradshaw. Toward the end of this episode, Charlotte has figured out that Miranda has truly a drinking problem that needs to be addressed, because she asks for Miranda's bag when they're out at lunch for a cell phone charger, rifles through it, and there's a lot of little bottles of liquor in there. And she's also been noticing, you know, the multiple glasses of wine at all the events that they go to. And so she tries to bring this up with Carrie. And I hasten to add, because you, dear listener, might be thinking to yourself, Carrie Bradshaw's got enough on her plate. She's mourning her husband. I accept that, but this episode is a few weeks later and she's very much dealing with life fine. Like, this opens on her conducting her podcast pretty much as per normal. She seems very functional. She's obviously still in a state of grief. She's doing an exceptional amount of walking around New York City, which I kind of think is a healthy thing to do at all times. But anyway, that's kind of presented as this symbol of how ill she is in her mental health and emotionality at the moment. But she's functioning. She's all good. Carrie Bradshaw at the end of this is presented with the situation from Charlotte that Miranda, we might need to actually step in here. Miranda's got a drinking problem. And it takes a bit of courage for Charlotte to bring this up, because Charlotte is always the shrinking violet, not wanting to create any fuss or bother for anyone else. She's plucked up the courage to bring this to the attention of her friend who's going through something. And Carrie says, "Don't we all have a drinking problem?" And then later, when Charlotte is naming the situations where this is getting out of hand, Carrie answers that with, "Okay, can you stop noticing things?" This is her best friend in the world. Mm-hmm.
I feel, and this is a global comment towards the Sex and the City verse, I feel like this has been so held up so much as a thing of womanhood, and it was so important to like it and to feel like this was, I didn't want to ruin anyone's time because people seem so enamored of it and it meant so much to them. And it's not only terrible, you guys, it depresses me. It makes me angry. It makes me want to burn down a bank. Big dives and I feel nothing. They are all crazy. They are empty shells with clothes on them that I don't understand. Carrie, she shouldn't be getting dressed. She's got, how many necklaces does she sleep in it? She can't sleep because she sleeps in like 25 necklaces and a bracelet, and she's got no purpose in her life, and she doesn't write anything, and they're just a bunch of paranoid rich weirdos, and I don't care about any of them.
It didn't even occur to me, Maureen, but I think you're completely right. Like, Carrie Bradshaw is devoid of purpose. Yeah. She's a writer who hasn't touched a keyboard basically in the to do any profession. The only time she touches the keyboard so far, and we're at the end of the third episode now, is to try and guess Big's password on his computer, because she's trying to solve these mysteries of why he has a picture of his dog in his wallet, why he left $1 million to his ex-wife Natasha.
Second time she writes. The first time she writes is in the first or second episode after she shies away from discussing masturbation on the podcast, and then she writes down masturbation in the afternoon, matinee season, or one-time showing or something. And it's like, okay, here is a writer who has not donned their tools for a while. Mm-mm. And obviously, you know, to write well, first you have to write badly. But it's interesting that you talk about how you're watching these rich paranoid women, Maureen, because it makes me wonder. I don't think the show is ever intentionally trying to discourage us from empathizing with the characters, or maybe to, you know, not unlike in something like Succession, to perhaps enjoy the fact that people who have all the trimmings and trappings of the life that is, you know, quote unquote, desirable to ordinary folk are actually potentially as if not more miserable than the people who are watching this on their laptops at home. None of these characters' lives look very good.
No, they don't. And I not only would I cross the street to avoid any of them, I have, because this is my home turf. And if I saw someone like fucking Carrie walking along, I want no part of that shit. The first episode, she goes to lunch. She comes home to watch Big Salt the Fish. They talk about whether they put on Todd Rundgren out. You leave Todd Rundgren out of this. And then the next day she goes to a piano recital. She writes two sentences and can't figure out what to do. So she's like, Big, jack off for me. Maybe that'll help me figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's all of this collateral damage. You're right. Like musicians, your book, the concept of podcasting, anything that they kind of rope into this universe is they're like real world objects from the plane of existence we live on. And they're like, that's also in the and just like that universe, you're like, oh, fuck off. Don't you get the shit out of your mouth, you know? Stand-up comedy, Bobby Lee, like, leave it out.
It honestly feels a lot like dress-ups. Like, it feels like we're watching a bad marionette show or something where all of these people are sort of like, is this what the world is like? Maybe people will be able to relate to this. And you're watching it and you're like, so obviously you sort of skimmed Twitter and understand that, you know, the world is changing, but you haven't engaged with any of it, and now you're presenting it in a season-long sitcom with characters who are like, who were relevant and were important and should have been left alone.
Yeah. It's the Hangover 3 that we're watching. I really came into this trying desperately to, I think it's so easy to be rough on Carrie, it's basically a meme at this point. So I came into this episode eyes and heart wide open, ready to stand with my girl who's going through a tremendous tragedy. Her husband, who she's finally, after a pretty, you know, tumultuous many, many years, has found some sort of peaceful and loving groove with the man, her husband. And then what does he do? He up and dies on her all of a sudden. And even the fact that they're at this will reading and suddenly it transpires that he's left $1 million to his ex-wife, Natasha. Listen, that's a hard thing to deal with. And so for Mattress Pikelet King to be able to take all of that goodwill that I tried to gin up by myself going into the episode, all of the goodwill that he created by throwing this interesting twist into the story early on, and then still managing to run that into the ground, whereby the end of the credits rolling on the episode, I am back to fucking hating Carrie Bradshaw. Like, this is a this can't be accidental. This has got to be an engineered, deplorable character.
You know, as a longtime listener, and I certainly know a lot more about your experience with Sex and the City than I do about Sex and the City. So in many ways, what I understand is a much more pure version. And I've really internalized so many of us. I mean, it's hard for me to overstate just how many times I've listened to you fucking guys talk about this. I listen to it like it's music. I could speak along with some episodes. When I like a podcast, I like it. And you're so positive. Like, you bring such a positive energy, and you won't destroy anything on purpose. You give it time before you destroy it. And you just don't want to take it down for the sake of taking it down. So I didn't want to come into this in the way that I was, which is that I hate them all so much and I wish ill for them. And when Big died, I laughed. I mean,
oh, no.
I laughed after the horror, because that moment is pretty horrific.
Yeah.
But then I started laughing because I didn't care.
It's a reasonably well done moment in that.
It's upsetting.
Look, I reckon Mattress Buckler King saw this in a movie, that whole cross cutting technique where you've got, you know, dramatic live piano performance happening where someone is creating the drama that underscores the scene and then cross cutting to him slowly going harder and harder on the peloton and then keeling over and dying. I think you saw that in a movie, but fair play to him. You know, good artists borrow, great artists steal. He successfully generated stress and tension in that moment through Lily's fantastic playing. So props to him for that. That was probably the most evocative moment that they've had in the three episodes so far, apart from, like, the blind fury that I just feel for Carrie. Like, I can't get over her disregarding Charlotte bringing the news of Miranda's alcoholism to Carrie, and Carrie just so casually brushing it aside and insisting that Charlotte shut her mouth. It is so wild to me that this whole show is supposed to be premised on these women are the best of friends and always have each other's back. It's sad, man. Bums me out. And also, Guy's frozen. I don't know if he's still on the call.
This is not a show about female friendship. I feel like I would know if it was. It's not like I am all women. But it just makes me feel cold and dead inside, just like them.
What do you think this is a show about, if it's not a show about women friendship?
I spent a lot of time trying to figure this out. Because for example, costume dramas. This is like a costume drama, right?
Yeah.
Except there's a reason for those costumes in the costume drama, because they're usually about, say, Jane Austen time or whatever, where the marriage market was an actual economic market. And, you know, your clothes were your value. You had to wear the jewels and the clothes to get the husband so that you had some sort of economic status so you could live. And they're just doing it for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
They could be doing anything, and they're doing this.
I think, look, Miranda's gone to university. I dig it.
Yeah, she's the only.
I've got respect and time for it.
Right.
Guy's back in the room. What do you reckon, Guy? Do these feel like fully fleshed out adults living a life? Or does this feel like Jane Austen's Emma, but without. It is like out of time, therefore it doesn't really make any sense?
They almost have the details of someone with a full life, but. I mean, I can't get past the discussion around Carrie. And I honestly feel like Sarah Jessica Parker at some point between the second movie and this series gave an interview where she didn't admonish Carrie, but I feel like she maybe acknowledged that she is, I don't know if I'm conflating things, an anti-hero, or was like, obviously a lot of what was done in the show would not pass muster now. And there is a degree of them trying to, you know, reach out, some form of atonement. But, like, it's the same old Carrie. If someone else has a problem, it better get out of the way, because I have my problems and I am the protagonist of the world.
We are doing a regular segment on these episodes that you won't have heard yet, Maureen,
no.
Which is best character, worst character, where we select who was our favourite in this particular episode of In Just Like That and who was our worst. Do you want to go first, or would you like us to go first so you can have a think about it? Because we did not warn you ahead of time.
No, I think you guys should go first because I actually have to think about who was in it.
Yeah, fair enough. Guy, do you want me to kick
off? I'm very happy to kick off because I actually was hoping, I think I felt like we were being negative, and I wanted to sprinkle some positivity through the episode. And there were a few things I wrote down which I enjoyed, and I'll read those, and then it will lead quite nicely to my favourite character, and then I'll unveil my least favourite. But there are a few little moments, a few little details which I thought, that's nice. I really liked the shorts Carrie wore when she was on the phone late at night to Miranda. They were baggy, they were cut down to the knee. You don't see a lot of shorts like that anymore. I think if I saw her wearing them in the daytime, I'd be slightly taken aback. But in that setting, I thought they looked really comfortable, and I wanted a pair. I also really liked it when they were observing, is her name Natasha, Big's ex-wife who got $1 million in the will, and Charlotte was trying to be mean about her to bolster Carrie's confidence because she is a sort of, you know, as you say, a shrinking violet, and you know, all she wants to do is help her friends at the cost of putting down a stranger. And she said she's wearing flats. And then Miranda said, that is the most desperate put down I've ever heard. I like that. I like that dialogue. I like that line. I like that delivery.
I loved that moment too.
I also enjoyed hearing Hold On by Alabama Shakes, a song that I hadn't heard for a long time. I thought that was a classy touch. You know, Sex in the Cities and Just Like That, acknowledging that not everything has to be set in today, 2021. But my favourite moment, and accordingly my favourite character, a real treat for viewers and podcast listeners alike to hear this even happened, was our friend Runkle, a rare glimpse of a shirtless Runkle rolling into the bathroom while Charlotte's on the phone and taking a monster piss. He said he had right of way, because it's a bathroom, and a bathroom is for the toilet. It's not for phone calls. And he's a fun guy to be around. And, you know, it's a reflection of where I'm at with the series, I think, that I mostly enjoy characters who aren't on screen a lot. But Runkle was my favourite today. And I'd say my least favourite for the first time this season would have to be Carrie Bradshaw for returning to the absolute peak of her powers as an entitled, self-interested and selfish person.
I will select for my favourite character in this episode, Anthony. I'm not sure what it was about the performance, but he felt like the realest mofo in this joint. There was something about I'm not saying it was correct, his advice that he gave to Charlotte. So Charlotte, it has been brought to her attention by her daughter, Rose, doesn't feel like a girl. So she's sort of struggling with her gender identity and bringing that to her mum and wrestling with that, which Charlotte feels very ill-equipped to deal with. So brings that to Anthony. And Anthony's like, it's a fucking kid. You don't have to listen to fucking kids all the time. Just ignore it. And it was like, you know, not perfect advice, but it just felt like a real person. And I love that he's got a business called Hot Fellas that's just buff, scantily clad dudes rocking around giving out sourdough. That's just gold. I love what he's all about. Least favorite character in this episode would be, do you know what? I'm going to say Brady's partner. Who insults the, I wouldn't say elderly, but, you know, middle-aged Miranda and Steve about their bones haphazardly. Sure, she didn't mean it with venom, but it was still a pretty boneheaded thing to say, and you got to respect the dojo, man. You're in their house constantly having sex with their son. At least try and negotiate a bit of politeness.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, I think I've got mine figured out. For right. favorite, I think it's Charlotte. Because you know what? You see her, she's in her bed reading to her. Now, her daughter looks to be, or child that of indeterminate gender, as part of this episode we find out. She's reading to her child. Now, that child looks to be about 13, little old to be reading what I believe is spy school to her child in bed. A little weird, but okay. It's nice. Child says, I'm not sure what gender I am. She takes that on board and says, well, you know what? I'm going to accept you and I want to do the right thing by you. That's great. And she notices that her friend has a drinking problem. She is ticking the boxes. She is ticking the boxes. And for worst character, I'm going to go with lawyer that won't get off the fucking phone while sitting in front of a widow reading a will.
That guy could not catch a break because he did the right thing by ignoring the phone call, but he did it in front of like his client and then got a very withering look from Miranda. And then all of a sudden he takes the call and he can't handle his business. I was like, this guy is having a hard day.
I like that guy has come out in this episode of our podcast as a real men's rights activist.
It was bound to happen.
Sticking up for our fellas.
I will not stand for the treatment of men in this series.
Bitches were calling him on his iWatch. He was able to hold off for a full 8 seconds until the call came in through the watch. And then he had to deal with bitches.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Have you got any other notes that you wanted to delve into as we start to land the plane on this episode, Maureen?
I need to know, and it's because I haven't heard this episode, but I need to know what you think of the wedding. Sorry, the funeral. And I think I keep saying a wedding because it looks like a wedding venue. It's a stark white room. For some reason, Carrie won't have flowers, and she walks into this room, and it's stark white, and she says, this is the only chic place to have a funeral in New York. Thank God for those lesbians. I feel like those two lesbians may be the MVPs of this whole thing, because they just are two women who just walk
You're
out
right.
for... Just, I don't know what that's apropos of nothing. Thank God for those two lesbians. That's a pretty bleak moment, that funeral, right? Aside from the obvious reasons that it's a funeral.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, my brain is pretty excited and ready for the fourth Matrix movie, which is coming out soon. So when they walked into that room, I was like, fucking having a service in the construct where they load like the guns, the walls of guns to come at you and you get to select what guns you want. That's a bold move.
I think they got that venue because it was cheap. It looks like a rehearsal room. It's just.
Did they make this during COVID? Like during do you think there were some restrictions?
I think there
on
were.
Filming because I'm just doing the timeline in my head. Mm-hmm. It must have been at least sort of 9 months ago-ish that they would have been shooting this. I would have thought.
They sit in groups groups of two in that seating area.
True.
And they seem to be just in a normal rehearsal room with some blank white chairs in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they could even get flowers because we didn't have Dick here. So.
CGI exists. You know, like you don't have to be making a Marvel movie to employ a little bit of computer generated imagery into whatever you're making.
You can't CGI. You can't CGI a soul, Tim.
Yeah, we don't tune into and just like that for this digitized, you know, horse shit. We tune in for a slice of reality, for a slice of people just like us dealing with everyday problems in an everyday way.
What'd you make of the funeral, Guy?
Honestly, I was so taken by the character of the secretary that the surrounding detail kind of faded into the background. Like, I, none of the way that Kerry went about organizing that funeral surprised me. You know, a chic funeral often comes at the cost of a personal touch. And I felt like it was all very abridged. And I don't know. I mean, you know, they managed to stuff that episode. And my excitement was still so high with enough detail that I wasn't really observing the minutiae of the actual service itself. But suffice it to say, those tasteful lesbians run a hell of a ship.
Fair play to them. Now, how many fucking episodes of this thing do we have left? Does anyone know how long this is?
I think it's 10 episodes. You have seven more. No, you've got seven more, my friends.
Feels like it should have been an 8-episode sort of season. But them's the breaks.
Oh, you know what's terrifying as well? On IMDb.com, it lists this as season one of And Just Like That.
Oh, no.
Which I hope is a digital formality and not some sort of signposting for what production has in store. I don't think there's any coming back from this being released. Look, it's been said a number of different ways, sometimes by us even, sometimes on this very podcast series. You had a culturally relevant, wildly celebrated show that ended in the early 2000s. It did important work. It broke ground. Everyone loved it. You fucking went for the cash grab and you ruined it. And then you've tried to resurrect its body using a combination of black chaos magic and electricity to bring the gals back together without a key ingredient of Samantha Jones. None of it's working. I'm very sad that we've got another seven episodes.
It feels like a haircut where they didn't quite get it right the first time, and so they're like, "I'll just take a little bit more off," and then they keep cutting hair, and it just looks worse and worse. And you think, "Hey, look, at some point we just have to cut our losses and let this thing grow out until we're not thinking about it anymore." But we're still in the barber's chair, and they are still trimming, and it is terrifying.
I'm delighted because I am the listener. I represent the listener here today, the devoted listener, the sycophantic listener, the one who knows everything. And I, personally, I'm not watching this shit anymore. I'm tapping out here. I'm done.
God bless.
But good. I will be with you. God. I will be with you the entire journey. I refreshed multiple times on my phone here today saying, is it here? Is it here yet? I am one of you. I'm one of your people. I am like the libertarian listener.
Je suis listener. Maureen, it is incredibly flattering to have you on board as our sole libertarian listener. Thank you so much for making the whole project worthwhile. And I'll just take this opportunity to retroactively, because I was contemplating putting a like precursor to this in the first episode, but there'll be a different one there now. As I explained before, was coming off the back of my first comedy gig in 4 months and a few beers. So that first episode is somewhat spicy out the gate and not my most articulate podcasting of all time. So apologies for that. But you're getting the unfiltered emotion of Tim Batt reckoning with this property. So enjoy it for all it's worth.
That's what we come for. We, the listeners, we go through your ups, we go through your downs. We're here for when you're on the rise in the first couple of episodes. And we're really here for when you get sort of the middle and the dip, where you guys really start tearing into each other. And that's where we get dividends. And that's what we stay for. We stay for when you start to fall apart. You start to question everything. Your health starts to suffer. Your friendship definitely suffers. And we want to thank you for the gift of destroying yourselves time and time again.
Well, as long as Mattress Pikelet's making them, we're watching them.
Oh, shit.
Maureen, it has been an absolute delight.
Thank you very much. That's the end of our episode. Guy, well done on combating the internet. Maureen, well done on joining us. Apologies for forcing you watching the first three episodes of this. Ecstatic that you're not going to watch anymore.
Absolutely not.
To everybody else listening, we will see you in the next episode. A good day.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.